From KQED Public Radio, this is the Capital Notes podcast for February 12th, 2010. There's tension in the air.
It's our special. It's our Valentine's Day edition. Where's the love?
I was about to say, we're supposed to be talking about love and, harmony. No. Cue the dark, ominous. No, actually, what we really need is we need like that wrestling, music, or the guy who says, let's get ready to rumble. Or
right. I'd settle for Eye of the Tiger.
Eye of the Tiger? That would be good.
Yeah.
So I'm John Myers from KQED, the fan of Rocky III.
So what's Rocky III?
It was. It's Anthony York, the editor of Capital Weekly and the blogger extraordinaire for the Los Angeles Times, for Political, is your blog.
I don't name them. I just write them.
There you go. One topic on this short podcast, probably a little short because we're jammed on deadlines and all kinds of things here on a Thursday afternoon, because of the great big Abel Maldonado fracas
that we had. The exact word that came to mind, fracas.
Fracas at the state capitol on Thursday afternoon.
A 5.5-hour fracas.
Yeah, so let's do the quick recap, because if you're listening to the podcast, you probably have already know the headline. We don't have to belabor that. We can just kind of talk about the atmosphere and what might happen next. But bottom line is Arnold Schwarzenegger thinks that he has a new lieutenant governor. The legislature does not. that's pretty much, or the assembly does not, or assembly Democrats
do not. Senate,
I don't know what this, we don't know. All the reactions aren't quite in yet. Some of them may be by the time you hear this podcast. But there's a real fundamental difference of agreement over whether Maldonado gets to be lieutenant governor based on what happened at the Capitol. The Senate voted to confirm him on Thursday morning. The assembly went 17 rounds of voting, and the vote didn't get to the magic 41 of the majority of the assembly, and on and on and on we went, and there was suspense and back and forth.
People drove up from Hanford.
I was going to say, a sick assembly member, Danny Gilmore, who has pneumonia, drove up from Hanford.
And didn't change the vote.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it didn't help.
It was great.
In the end, the assembly vote ended at 37 to confirm.
Correct.
35 against the confirmation. Nobody got the magic 41, and therein lies the problem. The Democrats in the assembly believe because Maldonado didn't get 41 votes, he's been rejected. It's over. The governor's office believes because he didn't get 41 no votes, then he wasn't rejected.
Right.
And therefore, if the legislature doesn't act again, which I think it may be hard for them to act in the next 11 days, Maldo becomes lieutenant governor. And all would be over, except it's never going to be that easy.
No, well,
never going to be that easy.
This comes down fundamentally to what the definition of rejection is. I submit to both assembly.
Interesting for a Valentine's Day, we're talking about rejection.
Well, I was going to say, if the assembly Democrats and the administration want to settle this, I can just tell them stories about my senior prom, but that's okay.
Sad.
Well, that's okay. Lindsay, if you're listening, we're all good. We're all good. We've all moved on.
Anyway, seeing as you've moved on, talk about rejection.
Obviously.
Talk about the legal quagmire of the word rejection.
I wish I knew, Mr. Myers. I wish I knew. The state constitution, I believe it's Article 5, Section 5B.
I think it's 5B.
Here's the difference between a bill and a constitutional appointment, which is different than another appointment, is if in 90 days nothing happens— then Maldonado would have automatically assumed the office, right? So the question is...
Well, there's an asterisk to that even, but keep going.
The question is, what happens if... what constitutes a rejection? Is it the same way that a bill is rejected? A bill is rejected when it comes up for a vote and does not get 41 votes. But the governor's office is saying, no, you need 41 to affirmatively reject Maldonado's nomination.
Yeah, because it really comes down to this notion of... does something not happen because not enough people supported it, or does it not happen because enough people said no?
Right. Now, the last time there was controversy over a statewide appointment was in 1988 when—
flipping back the calendar.
When— there it is. Nice, nice sound effect.
Look, here it is. 1988. Let's see. I had parachute pants.
Winds of change. Anyway, flip. When now Congressman, attorney, or excuse me,
Easy.
Former Attorney
Which
General.
Which title do you want to give him? Now Congressman,
Dan Lundgren.
Former Attorney General, former gubernatorial candidate.
And former selection of George Duke Majan to be State Treasurer to replace the late Jess Unruh.
Who still writes a column for your paper as Big Daddy.
Strangely, yes. Maybe that's what Maldonado's fallback.
He should consult Big Daddy in Capital Weekly next week.
It's another podcast. Something tells me that might just happen.
But Lundgren in 88. Was
confirmed by the Assembly and then rejected by the State Senate. Lundgren challenged it, took it to all the way to the California State Supreme Court, which ruled at the time that because he was rejected by one house, that constituted a rejection of his nomination. So basically setting the precedent that either house has the ability to reject. The difference is Lundgren lost the vote in the Senate 21-19. 21 senators voted to reject his nomination. That was a majority of the 40 senators. We don't have that situation now. So the Lundgren question has not really been adjudicated before. And if this does end up in the courts, you know, it could be interesting. Now, it may not. I mean, the Assembly could come back. They've already voted twice.
Yeah, this is the question of whether they can come back and do this again.
Well, the Assembly
there's 11 days left in the nomination. We should just say that. It was a 90-day period that the legislature had to act.
Right.
Today's the action happened on February 11th, leaving you 11 days. Go ahead.
Now, the Assembly is pretty good at waiving their own. I mean, Assembly rules state that you can only grant what's known procedurally as reconsideration. You can only grant that once. That happened today, so it was voted on twice in I would say quick succession, but it actually took 5 hours, which is, I guess, quick for the Assembly.
Yeah.
And they would need some sort of rule waiver to vote on it again.
Doesn't a rule waiver take a two-thirds vote?
I believe it does. I believe it does.
Good time.
So things are going to get real interesting here between now and the 22nd of February.
Okay, but let's just step back and have a couple of reality checks, just for fun.
Okay.
Just for real people. Actually, real people don't listen to this podcast. All of you dedicated listeners, you're not real, which actually worries me. Okay.
Not real.
If the Democrats in the Assembly, who got up, several of them on the floor, made floor speeches saying they were opposed to this nomination for various reasons, most of them on the theme, though, that Maldonado, that the governor should have appointed a caretaker to the position and not somebody who wanted to brazenly run for the office, and that it wasn't a nonpartisan, bipartisan action, but it was pure politics where the gov wanted a Republican, the state Senate wanted Maldonado's seat so that they could try to put a Democrat in it, yada, yada, yada. But here's what I was going to say. If the Democratic caucus in the Assembly wanted to reject Maldonado, then why didn't the ones who didn't vote just go up on the vote and vote no? Because the Democrats could have killed it absolutely incontrovertibly. Is that the right word?
Indubitably.
Yeah, my brain's a little fuzzy. But they could have killed it without any dispute if 41 of them said no, and 41 Democrats did not say no. And so my question, which maybe we'll learn more of those who didn't vote, why?
Why? And it's a good question. We don't have the answer to that question.
No.
What's interesting is that two members who voted against Maldonado in the morning abstained in the afternoon, and then two members who had abstained, the current speaker, Karen Bass, and future speaker, John Perez, abstained in the morning, and they came back and they voted against Maldonado in the afternoon. Why? I don't know. Maybe there was a meeting for insurance commissioner candidates somewhere.
Well, I think there was some heavy interest group pressuring on this too. I mean, I can't say it for sure, but I would be awfully surprised at the fact that I saw some organized labor folks with unhappy looks on their faces going into the speaker's office in between votes. Probably didn't help things either there, too. But, I don't know. I mean, all of this is the way the Capitol works. Everybody's got their own interest groups on the left and the right.
Are you saying that labor wanted him confirmed or didn't want him confirmed? Well,
probably didn't want him confirmed, I would think. But I don't know. It depends on which organized labor people you're talking
right.
to.
Because Maldonado's been endorsed by the Teachers Association in the past.
Exactly, right. So organized labor, I'm being vague because I don't really know for sure.
It was Angie, I know.
Well, she's listening to the podcast. She can call you. Okay, but here's the other thing. Now let's just talk about the governor's move to say he's going to swear Maldonado in. It is either bold and gutsy or silly.
Can't you be both?
Well, you can be both because it's politics. And I mean, you know, I said this on the afternoon news on KQED, the same thing that I'm about to say now, which is that, you know, we all have heard these stories. The bio of Arnold Schwarzenegger, he loves to play chess. He loves the game. This is an interesting chess move to say, I'm going to swear Maldonado in, and you in the legislature, the burden is on you to stop it. The burden is on you to go to court. I don't have to go to court to get him to be lieutenant governor because I believe I'm right.
Right.
You see it, you know, it's the burden's on you to, quote unquote, drag this out to then I can say you're the one who's being obstructionist, yada-da, yada-da, yada-da. Now, that's the whole kind of bold move. The silly move is does the public give a damn? And doesn't the public – I mean, you know, we're talking about an office that has virtually no power other than being the second guy in command. Even that is not that big of a deal.
And maybe that's the play. Doesn't that put the Democrats in a tough spot to go out and actively block Maldonado? I mean, it's kind of a difficult argument to make that they're going to go spend however many dollars. You know, I don't know what a court case like that costs. How long it takes to fight over a race that over an office that will be up for election in a few months that doesn't have a lot of constitutional power. And, you know, when you talk about this as a game of chess, I mean, the interesting thing – one of the interesting things in this is that if – I think it's more chicken than chess, you know, but if this game of chicken is – as we get closer – at some point, if Maldonado –
we've said this exact same thing about budget negotiations before, but go ahead.
But if Maldonado is going to accept – is going to be sworn in, he's going to have to resign his Senate seat. And is he willing to do that? That's
– for something that the courts could overturn.
Right. And so he could be out of a job completely in a month if this all plays out a certain way. So,
But I'm not sure that that's a big of a deal. And here's why. He was going to run for lieutenant governor anyway.
Right.
Everyone said that if he got rejected by the legislature, then he could play the martyr card. You know, I am the martyr of trying to be bipartisan. I'm not saying everybody has to buy this, but just playing along for a moment. So if he really, really has his heart set on the lieutenant governor job anyway, then losing that last 2 years in the Senate, it's not a financial problem for him. He's got plenty of money from his family's farming business in Santa Maria. So, I mean, you know, I'm not sure that there's more. It's a calculated gamble. It's a gamble nonetheless, but it's not like a throw caution to the wind gamble.
Well, but it still is. I mean, understand. You know, I asked this question because remember when Maldonado was first appointed by the governor, the Senate leader, Daryl Steinberg, talked about he raised concerns about his appointment because of the cost of having an election to fill his seat and saying, you know, that was one of the issues. And I thought, at the time, I was talking to somebody and said, well, what about if Maldonado just resigned? If he resigned, then you have to have a special election anyway. The cost issue is off the table. It's moot, you know, blah, blah, blah. And somebody who I trust a lot, who's sort of a respected political type, looked at me and said, you don't understand politicians, do you? Just, I mean, they don't take those kinds of risks. And you know, it'll be interesting. I mean, Maldonado will certainly get a lot of publicity out of this one way or another, for good or bad. But whether he's willing to give up those 2 years in the Senate for this, I don't know.
Two other layers of this, one that just came to mind and one that I wanted to talk about. Let's do the one that just popped into my head. We were spending all this time over the last couple of weeks talking about that the legislature, if they took action by the 16th, if Maldonado could be sworn in by the 16th, you could jigger the special election calendar as such that you could consolidate a potential runoff in Maldonado's Senate seat in June. Well, if Maldonado is not going to be sworn in until the 23rd under controversy because of this whole thing, then that goes out the window. So you go back to the original calendar that says you'd have to have two special elections. You could consolidate with June, but you'd have to have a runoff for the seat if no one got 50%.
Right.
Sometime between June and November.
So what that does, I mean, say nobody gets 50%. Say the primary election, the open primary election, is consolidated with the June elections, and the runoff would be sometime in July, and it'd be a standalone. You know, it'd be the only thing on the ballot in these five counties that encompass the 15th Senate district, and real low turnout, and it would be that much harder for Democrats to take that seat.
All right, so then this is the thing I wanted to talk about, and this was another smart political type in the Capitol who said this to me today, and I think it has some merit. I don't know for sure how far this went down, but this is also a person who was involved in a lot of these discussions on the Republican side of the aisle. And that is and then this gets back to my Arnold Schwarzenegger likes to play chess comment. If you look a few – sorry, I pulled something off – a knob off of the console here in the studio. If you look a few steps down or a few plays down the board – and you think about one of the things that got talked about the Maldonado nomination is he's a Latino. He's a Republican Latino, and it says something about the Republican Party perhaps, or you could try to make the case we're trying to reach out. Let's not forget this one person mentioned to me that this story about Maldonado has been played a lot bigger in the Hispanic press around California than it has – in the rest of the press.
I'm guessing I know who you talked to.
Well, maybe we talked to the
talked
same
to him
person.
Too.
Yeah, and maybe I don't know if you buy this particular. Did you say him or her? A person. We don't want to identify this person.
Oh,
but anyway,
that narrows it down. It's a male.
Anyway, and this is a big move for Republicans, and that there were a lot of Republicans who didn't want to vote for Abel Maldonado. They don't like the fact that he voted to increase taxes, that he crossed those party lines, that he didn't play the party game. And yet,
and
if you look,
didn't.
And yet,
some
well,
didn't
but
today.
Very few didn't. Very right. few didn't. As a matter of fact, I'm not sure he got any no votes from Republicans.
No, the only Chuck DeVore was the Senate.
He got He got an abstention of a Republican in the Assembly, and the only no's in the Senate were the guy running against him in the primary for Lieutenant Governor Sam Onestad and Jeff Denham. Who was going to run for lieutenant governor.
And George Runner, who's running for
Board of Equalization. Sorry. But the point is, look how many rank-and-file legislative Republicans who don't agree with the way Maldonado's played the game voted for him. And I just wonder if there is a larger discussion going on about trying to get this Republican in office, trying to move this – you know, again, maybe getting behind the governor's theory here. That I think you know he has about Republican politics and where Latinos are.
Or better yet, as a win-win for them, knowing that Democrats were not going to confirm Maldonado, sort of holding him up as a martyr and trying to gain some positive press or sway voters.
In which case you win either way.
Right.
In which case you win either way.
And that is cold and calculating.
It is
cold. Really
it is cold and calculating because, I mean, what it really depended on was something that's unfortunately, no disrespect to the Assembly Democratic Caucus, but it depended on something that turned out to be very predictable, which is that the Assembly Democratic Caucus was all over the place on this. And we're going to make it a much different issue than in the Senate where Democrats had a broader sense of the fact that we're not making a political endorsement here. We're giving the governor the benefit of the doubt when we all need to work together to solve the state's problems.
And what is that? And that's sort of the most interesting thing about this to me is, first of all, you know, from a lot of folks who I talk to, the person running the drill on this inside the Democratic caucus, in the Assembly Democratic caucus, was the speaker-elect, John Perez. What does this say about his speakership? Here's a guy who was elected as a son of labor, right? Who, when he got elected speaker, said, "You know, look, I'm going to surprise some people. I'm not a knee-jerk, you know, liberal vote on all things." And here is what will be interpreted as, I think, a craven political, partisan political act. I think that will be, whether or not that's accurate, that will be the sort of interpretation of this vote today. What does that say about John Perez and his leadership of the caucus, of the Assembly Democratic Caucus? I mean, I think it's an interesting first step for a speaker who has prided himself in not being easily pigeonholed and defying labels throughout his career. I think that's one thing. Look, they're going to get beaten up by every editorial board in the state, the Assembly will, over the next couple of days. And I think that that the Assembly will emerge from this looking childish.
And just quickly, because we're going to wrap this up in a moment, because there'll be much more to talk about. But that's my point. For 2 weeks now, we're going to talk largely about this. This will drive the narrative of the Capitol for a long time in the middle of a budget crisis, in the middle of a special session, in the middle of all these other things that are going on. And so how does that help the Democratic Party? How does that, you know, how does that help things in the long run? I mean, and it probably doesn't, in which case it just goes to show, you know, lack of unity, all the different things you talk about. I don't know. The dynamics are really complicated.
And what does that do to the working relationship inside the Capitol?
Between the two houses and between
the parties. Yeah. What incentive now does any Democrat or any Republican have to cooperate with Democrats if you know, if they're going to, I mean, if the one the one Republican who did consistently cooperate with Democrats gets rejected. I mean, you know, there's a lot of ways and there's a lot of counter arguments that a lot of Democrats today are making, saying, look, they called Maldonado an extortionist, that he used his budget vote as leverage, the fact that he was a swing vote to get personal to personally gain from the budget process. But there's another interpretation of, and I think there was some resentment from,
yeah,
because that came from the other house, some resentment that a lot of Assembly Democrats felt like they had been held hostage by Maldonado. But what does that do as we get into this budget process here over the next couple of weeks? What does this do to the well, right? I mean, has the well sort of been poisoned by what happened today in the Assembly?
We'll be testing the water between now and next week.
Well, water.
Yes,
good.
Water. Yes, testing the water.
Consistency in metaphors. I like it.
Yeah. Well, so this is the shortest podcast we've done in a while, but you can ponder all this over the weekend. And we have other news we'll come back and talk about next week. The old life and death of the ConCon, the Constitutional Convention, the budget.
The budget.
Some more of the wrangling for the race for governor and the race for Senate. But, you know, for now, this great big thing is kind of what we're doing. So
deal with it.
So deal with it. Deal with it. And Anthony's prom date, call him if you need to, because he wants to make amends.
Please.
But don't call him on Valentine's Day, because that'll tick off his wife.
Yes. She will be. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Myers.
I'm a smart married man. For Anthony York at Capital Weekly, I'm John Myers at KQED. We'll see you next time.